Hello, everybody, and welcome to Friends of the Force, a Star Wars podcast. I'm your host, Brad.
And I'm your host, Sarah.
And welcome to the third and final installment of Jar and Jargon. We did three of these.
Jar and Jargon.
For an eight-episode season.
We really, you know what? This succeeded. Our release schedule really did not go as planned.
Not really at all. Yeah.
It just so happened that we were like, oh my gosh, we're both busy, and how are you feeling about this season? In the middle. So let's just combine episodes. And now we've only done three episodes. So Brad was like, you got even a better deal than you imagined. And I'm like, yeah, Brad, but I watched the whole season, the entire thing.
Yeah. You know, it's like, it's sort of this attitude. Like you said, we have very busy lives, and Sarah was uncertain. And then like I became increasingly uncertain with Celebration around the corner.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that was just like, okay. And then we watched an episode while I was in London, but then they premiered the next episode while I was in London. And then I came back and I was like, let's do it. Let's do these two episodes and then we'll dedicate a whole episode to the finale. And then I got the worst con crud that I've ever had. Not COVID, thankfully, because I tested like every single day and all negative, thankfully. But it wipes me out and I'm still kind of low-key recovering from it. Although like my, you know, sinuses have drained a little bit so I can actually talk on the podcast, which you need. Naturally to podcast.
Right. That's really the only thing you need.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't even need equipment. You really just need a voice.
Yeah, truly. Actually, though. But I'm glad we got our Celebration episode out because we recorded it the night before I got hit by a truck with sickness. And that's out in the world now. So, hey, listener, we are together now podcasting. If you want to hear our thoughts on all the Celebration news that just came out, we have an episode up on the feed right now.
Yeah.
So there's some housekeeping out of the way. And if you're wondering what we're going to be up to after this episode of Jar and Jargon, we got three High Republic book discussions to do in the coming weeks. So if you're a High Republic fan, get ready, because we're diving deep into phase two, wave two. Heck yeah. And we also have Friends of the Fourth, our annual show where we talk about all of our favorite memories from the past 365 days in Star Wars.
Give or take a couple of days, because every year we inevitably have things where like, wow, why didn't we talk about that last year? So there'll probably inevitably be one or two of those as well.
Yes.
But in addition to that, looking just kind of like forward towards the summertime, we kind of have a more open schedule than we've had in a long time. So you can expect some like fun, silly out there episodes from us, or just random stuff. So if you're kind of here for nothing that is attached to a timed piece of media, like a release, if you're just like, I really like that one episode they did that one time in April of whatever last year that was about this thing, we'll do more of those things, like topic conversations as well. So I'm really looking forward to that, and I hope that you guys are too. Some good stuff coming down the line.
And visions,
which is also good stuff coming down the line.
we got screeners for Visions, so we're making our way through those episodes right now, and that will actually be up on May the 4th along with our Friends of the 4th episode. So we'll have two of those out that day. And then back to the High Republic, and then back to, like you said, some fun this summer. It's nice
not
to
the
not
High Republic isn't fun. It's just
tragedy.
Different kind of fun.
Right. Kind of pain fun.
Torture. Fun.
Yeah. But it's nice. It's nice to like be moving into a time when we're not tied up with, like you said, timed releases. It's a little bit more freeing. But speaking of time releases, this is coming a couple days after the Mando season 3 finale. We are talking about three episodes today on the pod. So we're talking about Guns for Hire, which was the Bryce Dallas Howard episode, and chapters 23, The Spies, and chapter 24, The Return, both directed by Rick Famuyiwa. All episodes written by Jon Favreau, Dave Filoni co-written on chapter 23 with Jon. So his only writing credit this season, I believe, because he's been busy with Ahsoka doing the head writing.
Foundling.
The Foundling.
As well.
Was that chapter 20?
20.
Okay, gotcha. Cool. Mm-hmm. So those three episodes, how we're going to approach the discussion, we're going to start off talking about our overall thoughts on the season, because now that we're at the end, Sarah and I have a lot of thoughts on, you know, what we've watched, and we'll move into a little bit of chapter 22 since it was a couple weeks ago at this point. And we'll sort of combine our discussions on chapter 23 and 24, because at least I, and I think you do as well, kind of view it as like one long piece of Star Wars media. Like, it could have honestly been probably one episode with the way that it was formatted. And it was, a lot happened in those two episodes. Very, very intense stuff. Very action heavy, victorious moment for our Mandalorians, and full spoiler warning ahead as well from here on out.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of gave the spoiler before the spoiler warning, but I would imagine if a listener is listening to this, I hope they've seen it, or otherwise do not care.
Yeah, I would assume by now most people have watched The Mandalorian season 3. I would assume.
Part of me is like, do we need to put a spoiler warning? Are people really clicking on episodes, you know, that they haven't watched or whatever? This is podcast is a pretty self-selecting audience. It's not like you're like getting fed new things like in the YouTube algorithm, like YouTube recommendations, and then somebody like drops a spoiler 2 seconds out of the gate. I wonder. I mean, this is just me pondering out loud.
Right,
it's probably a good thing to do just to, like, you know, be courteous, but like,
yeah,
maybe we should just start to say spoilers 2 seconds in and just be like, deal with it, guys. You clicked on the episode
just
that
full
said
chaos mode,
in-depth discussion on XYZ thing. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, spoilers.
We're turning into our villain era with spoilers right off the bat.
You know,
2 seconds in.
Maybe we should enter. Maybe everybody deserves a good villain era.
Yeah.
You know, like, I didn't really, like, I had kind of like a teen angst era, but like, maybe I need to. I told my mom, I said, you know, I was a pretty good kid. Like, I didn't have, like, I wasn't too rebellious or anything. I was like, I'm having my teen angst era in my mid-20s, and it's just me playing music in my car really loudly. Like, just deciding that I'm going to happily be the most obnoxious person on the road. So maybe we just need to have our, like, teen angst era on the podcast.
You know who else is having their teen angst era?
Grogu.
Yeah.
Oh, I answered it right.
Yeah. Because he's got the yes. Yes. Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Love that for him. That's like his angsty teen phase. You know, I love
that. It's like, it's like when a kid asks, you know, or like when the parents like, just because I say so, because I say so. He's having like one of those moments, you know?
And he's also learning how to drive.
How to drive.
He's like driver's ed, Grogu edition. So, I'm going to learn how to walk in this robot. He was zooming too at the end of episode chapter 24. Like, when he walked in the cantina with Mando, he was walking fast.
Yeah.
I think he really learned how to tippy tap those feet, however fast he needs to.
I feel like maybe the training, you know, the training setting got turned off there by the end.
Mm.
You know, they got when you learn to ride a bike, you got the training wheels.
Yeah.
And then you take the training wheels off, then you got to balance. Maybe he got the training wheels taken off and he was able to move at a good clip.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All that Luke training, though, paid off, certainly, in this episode, right? Like, the hopping around, flippy. Yeah, that happened. Grogu did get trained by Luke Skywalker. That did happen. Yeah.
Off screen, essentially.
Off screen, yeah. not this season. It was in another show that happened last year.
Yeah. Okay, so...
Yeah.
I would like to know, kind of before we kind of... well, I guess we can talk about overall season 3, but I also wanted to ask about your experience seeing the episode at Celebration.
Yeah. So we watched chapter 23. Yeah. So we watched chapter 23. First thing, they showed us like 5 minutes during the showcase, which was the opening sequence with Katie O'Brien and Moff Gideon and the whole conversation with the different Imperial leaders. And so that was exciting. And then we came back later that night to watch the full chapter, getting to watch it in a full group setting. Unfortunately, a very tall man sat in front of me. So oftentimes I was trying to really extend my body, much like IG-12, making myself taller over this gentleman so I could see the screen that was very far ahead. So it was nice to come back home and watch it in the comfort of my home without somebody in front of me. But it's not that gentleman's fault. It's just, you know, how the cookie crumbles.
You know, it really makes you wonder why God didn't, you know, or whatever the maker, whoever you believe in, if anybody, like, why didn't they make you the obnoxiously
tall person? 6'7". Yeah. Like why can't I be as tall as a Wookiee?
Why can't I be the one who's able to reach on the top shelf at the grocery store?
I enjoyed watching the episode in a group setting. It was a lot of fun hearing people's reactions. Paz Vizsla dying. There was a girl in the front of the room who screamed when it happened, and she sounded very distraught.
Hope she's okay.
Yeah, I hope she's doing okay. Man, Paz Vizsla, we spent so much time in the finale remembering his death. That came and went far too soon.
There's like a layer of like facetiousness to that entire comment. It was great.
I just really feel like we had time to reflect on that sacrifice. But it was great because, again, I've talked about this on the celebration episode, and it was nice to experience it communally with people. And that was my first time getting to do that since the Rise of Skywalker, really. And that was a good time. So I appreciated the opportunity, and I hope Lucasfilm and Repop like do more of those at future celebrations. Just getting to watch things with people in a room, I think, is always exciting, not just the panel itself, but actually experiencing the Star Wars. So that's great. Now, coming back home, on the other hand, and diving back into Twitter discourse has been something, you know, like the fandom conversations online, because it's one thing when you're at Celebration and you can have your opinions and talk about the episode. And that was always like a fun experience. Like, oh, hey, what'd you think of the Mando episode? You know, like having actual conversations. And now we're back to sort of just the online.
And then you come home to talk about it with me, and my like my commentary while watching it is so...
It's entertaining.
It's so ridiculous. And you're like, oh my God, I thought you were going to enjoy this. And I'm like, I am not.
But like, it's just interesting because it's just, the season has been so divisive for so many reasons. And I think ultimately, like, where I kind of fall is just let people feel how they want to feel. You know, as long as their opinions aren't harmful to anyone or any group, let people express how they feel. Because, like, you know, we all kind of approach Star Wars and any sort of media with different tastes and different preferences for how our stories are told. Like, we don't come into these things wanting to hate it or wanting to dislike it. We come to it wanting to expand our imagination and, you know, feel something emotionally with these characters and with the story. Like, that's what we want to go into it with, right? And then that's not always the case for people. Like, we sometimes come out of it not experiencing that, no matter how much we wish we could have. And that's not like our faults. That's not like a creator's fault in some ways, you know? So like, we're trying our best to like approach these stories and get something out of them. So hopefully like during our conversation today, like, yeah, we will have criticisms for sure. But I think there are also things that we walk away from the season with and these couple episodes, like really enjoying and cherishing for certain. Yeah. And, you know, that's all we can do is like give and take, seek joy in the places that you want to seek joy. But also, like, don't be a jerk to people just because they disagree with you on something. Like, you don't have to make people feel the way that you feel. Just, like, maybe come to an understanding of experiences and share that with each other. But don't, like, you know, force your opinion on others or tell them that they're wrong or they're stupid or they didn't look at it right or they don't know how to have fun. You know, like, I've been hearing all sorts of things online and it gets frustrating to an extent.
I know. You know, yeah, it's a really interesting thing because, like, I think the thing that I learned kind of diving into online fandom around Star Wars is like Star Wars is a common denominator amongst the fandom in name only, if that makes sense, because each of us love something different. We might have incredibly different backgrounds, incredibly different takes, incredibly different perspectives, different political opinions, different experiences, different, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so I know, like, I used to feel a lot like, oh, this person is like totally interpreting The Last Jedi wrong or whatever, you know, like like a lot during the Last Jedi era. And I remember at least like feeling so strongly about things that other people said. And then I realized after a while, I was like, I'm happier when I don't feel like this about this stuff. And you know, people who see my point of view in it are going to see my point of view in it. And that's great. And I'm really glad to talk to those people. People who don't, I'm, you know, if we're having a capital C conversation about it, I will happily explain my point of view. But like, otherwise, I'm not here to convince anybody of my personal take on it. I'm just going to live happily in my own little corner about it. So yeah, I wish we were all, ultimately kinder to each other and kinder to ourselves in this conversation around this stuff either, because like I don't know, I feel like it's not worth getting worked up about it anymore, in a way, you know, like, is it worth my 240 characters and 2 minutes of my life to draft that tweet? Nah. So
it really isn't. That's why we like do what we do here on the podcast. There are so many things that like you and I say here that we don't tweet about, but we say here because it's you and I talking and, you know, people listening want to listen, I hope. So it feels
like
if you're
like dragging yourself through a Friends of the Force episode, just like, don't like, please. I'm as the person who, you know, hosts it, like, you know, I implore you to do something that really makes you happy. If it's not us, then that's okay. You know, like, yeah, that's okay.
But I also think there is value in like listening to other perspectives, like even ones that you might disagree with, because I think like ultimately we want things to succeed. And I tweeted this the other day, and I do think of Star Wars as like a pizza, right? We all have different preferences on our pizza. Like,
yeah,
oh, I like
Black
Hawaiian.
Brad has to get the gluten-free crust.
Yeah, yeah. So I definitely have preferences. It's like, oh, I like Hawaiian pizza. Oh, I don't like pineapple. I do like a meat lover's pizza. Or I like a breakfast pizza. I like Chicago style deep dish. I like New York pizza. I like the butter also, crust, yes. Not butter crust, cheese stuffed. You know, there's
Brad,
so many.
Can we hit the pause button?
Yeah.
The butter crust is a must.
It's, yeah, the Luminati's gluten-free butter crust. Let me tell you. But there's like so many different ways that you can prepare pizza, and no way is the correct way. Like, even pizza that you is like super cheap pizza, like a dollar, and you know it's gonna like just be greasy as hell. And it's just like, ugh. You're going to eat it anyways, because like, you know, it's 2 a.m. You've had a couple drinks. You'll want a slice of pizza. And at the end of the day, you're going to go home and be like, damn, I'm glad I got that $1 slice, you know?
Can
and like,
can I put my pizza line in the sand?
Oh,
leftover pizza is not worth it.
See, that's okay though, because you think that and somebody else, leftover pizza might be their favorite type of pizza. And who are we to judge?
And we may not be besties, and that's okay.
And that's okay. You know? So like at the end of the day, we all still like pizza. We just like different types, and that's fine, you know? And, I think there's just value in like acknowledging that it's okay to have different opinions, and, you know, just kind of putting that out there. Cause there's just been a lot of things going on and talked about, and it's exhausting. It's exhausting.
I have a lot of things muted.
That's a good thing. You know, mute,
I really do.
Liberally, like just curate your experience online the way that you need to. And I've definitely done that this season, and it's been nice. And just go on Twitter less, because it's now full of blue check marks who are having their day in the sun, I guess, being made fun of publicly in front of everybody. It's kind of fun.
But it's weird, because like random people over a million followers are also getting their blue check marks back, and they're like, I did not pay for this. So,
you know, things are going really aware. Well, with the blue check mark verification program, when people don't want it anymore, that's when you know it's the sign of a healthy website that is operating at full functionality.
Right. Things are bad anyway.
Oh my gosh. We're entering a new era of Twitter takes. It's great. I love it. I've seen some crazy ones.
Everything literally is bad on Twitter, and yet I am still there, because that, where else am I going to get like my hourly BTS bots? Okay. Like,
yeah.
It's a must. Anyway,
there is not a better toilet bowl than the one I've spent so many hours on the last 10 years. And Twitter is my toilet bowl at this point. And I'm here to stay. I've sat on the toilet bowl.
Yeah.
I've gotten comfortable.
Yeah.
And I'm not leaving that toilet bowl spot.
I think we should talk about Mando.
We've spent 20 minutes not talking about Mando. Okay. So, no, we have a little bit, but, Sarah, what are your thoughts on season 3? Cause again, you came into season 3
with me.
We're going to start with you, cause I've been rambling. You came into season 3, not having watched much of season 2. You did watch the Book of Boba Fett, which included two episodes of The Mandalorian. What was your experience this season, like both good and bad, like what worked, what didn't, and what do you walk away from it from feeling?
Yeah, okay. It's fine. Like it's fine. It's not doing anything. Which is okay. I don't plan to return to any of these episodes, maybe except for Guns for Hire, cuz Lizzo.
That's a good one. Yeah.
But also maybe The Convert. I have some mixed opinions on that. I have a complicated feeling about that one, but that's okay. That's good. But yeah, it's just not doing much for me. When the trailer came out, I was like, oh, there's some interesting threads that they're pulling on here. This seems interesting. It seems like there's a little bit more politics happening here. And in, like, we get that in moments, but in large part, it's not that, which is okay. But having seen the last two episodes and having seen Gideon's return and like Gideon having to do a lot of like villain exposition, or in order to wrap the season up, it feels like there are ultimately missed opportunities for the earlier six episodes to build that out more and really make the stakes feel high and understood by the audience as much as they seem to be understood by the characters, and not like implicitly as in like, oh, we as the audience watch Clone Wars, we just know that Mandalore is important, but in the sense that like it's important because it feels this way for the characters, and it, you know, like I don't know if that makes a lot of sense.
No, totally. Because what would somebody who hadn't watched the Clone Wars think of the reclaiming of Mandalore at the end of chapter 24? Like, would they care? Or like, would they feel emotionally invested had they not watched Bo-Katan lose Mandalore in the Siege of Mandalore and when Maul took over, right? Like, and there shouldn't be an expectation to watch all those things to feel something in the show.
And I mean, I'm not somebody who's watched most of the Clone Wars, but I have watched The Siege of Mandalore, which is great. We will talk about it on the pod at some point because I do itch to rewatch it. I didn't feel the stakes for myself as a viewer, if that makes sense. I know that it's important to the characters. I know that it's in integral to the characters' existence, but like, it's not something that I felt. It was just something that I knew. So I feel like there were missed emotional opportunities in the season, as well as like missed plot opportunities in this season. And ultimately, while it was like fine and enjoyable, and I understand why people like get a lot of joy from this show, because like Grogu is really effing cute. And I know so many people love the pew 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 in Star Wars, like more than other elements of Star Wars. And there's a lot of that in the show. And that's all great. But for me, it just like, I don't walk away from it like feeling anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I spent the time watching it. That's fine. But I'm not going to be like thinking about it past this conversation about it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like even saying this, which is pretty neutral negative, but like neutrally told, is makes me feel like very negative about it.
Yeah. And we say this knowing too, and you said it as well, people connected with the season. People really love the season. Yeah, yeah. For some people, it's their favorite Mandalorian season. You know, for myself, I would say probably season one is my favorite still, because it is so much closer to the root of what drew me into the show initially, which was just, you know, father, son, Din, Grogu traveling the galaxy, doing things together, and Din shedding parts of himself that have been built up over time, the walls that he has held up, right? And I was surprised, like very shocked this season when, you know, I really came into it with an open mind because season two was kind of, you know, I was kind of neutral on season two. I think there were a lot of really high points, and I was hoping that maybe this season would sort of get back to that focus. And surprisingly, I felt like Din almost took a more of a back seat throughout the show this season. And which is not a bad thing, because in his place, we sort of got Bo-Katan at the forefront. And like Katie Sackhoff as Bo-Katan is one of the highest points of the season for me. I think she's excellent on screen. I think every time she was in a scene with her helmet off acting, I was drawn in. I was focused. I felt something. And that really meant a lot to me as a Bo-Katan fan, as somebody who watched Clone Wars and watched her in Rebels, right? And it seems like the end of the season kind of hit the reset button in a way to say, okay, now if we do a possible season four, it will be maybe closer to the Din and Grogu of season one, and they're doing missions for the New Republic, you know, as independent contractors. And that actually really like intrigues me. Like I would love that. Like I really love Din and Grogu. I'm a diehard for them ever since the show aired. But I don't feel like we really got to get them as close as I would have liked throughout the season. Like there are moments for sure, and like Grogu's cute as shit. Like Grogu's also a highlight. Like he did some great stuff this season, you know, like zooming around as Pram.
He's the
and,
highlight.
Yeah, he's always the highlight, and I will not deny
his
that
cuteness.
Yeah. But I did struggle too just with the scope of the season, because I think they tried to do so much that it became sort of a jack of all trades, master of none situation, where they're trying to fit so much in. And then like you have Moff Gideon at the end, but because that wasn't built up, it's like, okay, now I got to exposition everything and my purposes and my motives and tell you everything like right at the last second. So the audience right. understands. And it's like, okay, well you can tell me all that stuff and like why these are your motives. But with you telling me like, you know, with less than an hour to spare in the season, like, do I care enough now to like now feel the weight and the stakes? And for me, that wasn't the case. Like, I think if he had kind of been sprinkled throughout, if we had gotten more with Aliyah Kane and kind of what was going on with Dr. Pershing and the Empire in the background, like there were definitely seeds of it, but like, I don't think quite enough of those seeds to really make me feel like the Empire is a threat and like why this battle to take Mandalore back from them is so important.
Right. And I think it's so interesting. You talk about how season one for you was the key season because it was father and son and kind of, you know, them against the world, kind of an energy to it. But also very endearing and kind of him learning to take care of Grogu. Right. And for me, I actually prefer kind of the more intricate plot stuff. You know, when you were talking about the season before it aired and kind of talking to me about the season, I think what was really exciting to me was like the political potential, the galactic implications, this idea of having seen the Siege of Mandalore and like understanding and feeling that story and like really being invested in that 4-episode arc, which, guys, we watched it like on a random day. We were just like on Zoom and I was like out of my mind. I was like, I get why everybody's attached to this now. I get it. I should have been there, you know, I get it. I was so in on it. So I was like, okay, if we're going back to Mandalore, if we're going to retake Mandalore, like that's important for the Mandalorians. And like, that's really pivotal. There's a lot of plot there. And that's what was pulling me in. But I felt like, you know, I can give or take the father and son stuff. I just didn't feel like the plot stuff was as developed as I wanted it to be in terms of the political stakes and the Empire. And I agree with you. Yeah. Like, I think we could have had Gideon sprinkled in through there. And I think that it would have been really interesting as you were talking. I was thinking about, okay, we have the convert, which had this really interesting kind of a side story. We get to Gideon through Aliyah Kane ultimately. And I think it would be interesting to put Gideon in there earlier and to get that like heel turn for Kane earlier as well. Maybe not in that episode, but, or maybe at, like at the end of that episode, she pages him or whatever. And we were like, oh shit, like she's not a friend, you know, she is a foe to Pershing and to the Republic. And I kind of feel the way that is insidiously like baked into that program, perhaps. I think that would have perhaps given a stronger commentary on that program and like ultimately also helped us to understand the level by which the Empire is still operating underground, because we know in the books, like having read both the Aftermath trilogy and the Alphabet Squadron trilogy, is that like things are still happening in terms of the Empire into the First Order, the Palpatine mechas, you know, like cloning, all of these things, Jakku, like all of these things are happening in the background. Obviously, we know the Empire is not gone. So I think getting seeds of that earlier would have helped us to understand better that state of the galaxy. And then also, I think if we had gotten a better idea about what Gideon was doing on Mandalore earlier and like the ways in which he was dominating Mandalore, because we know they can't go back to Mandalore because, first of all, like, they think Mandalore is cursed or like the air isn't breathable, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Poison,
but like, yep, right. But then Bo-Katan and Din find out that it's not. But then it seems like really their only obstacle to like going to Mandalore is like that storm that they have to fly through. You know, like the stakes are really low. We don't understand the threat of the Empire until they're in the midst of what I find to be a kind of confusing battle. I don't know what the Mandalorians need to do in order to retake Mandalore because it doesn't feel fully formed.
Mm-hmm. Which, speaking of the Empire, can we talk about maybe what might be a highlight for both of us is the Shadow Council scene and getting some crumbs there? Because, you know, we've talked about some criticism. So let's talk about something that actually like was really exciting. Yeah, Brundle Hux.
Yeah. I love that. I love the cold open with the Shadow Council. I thought that was really interesting. I was so excited to have Gideon back because I think from the first season, he was definitely my favorite part of that. Giancarlo Esposito just like eats every line that it's given him, even if it's not
good. He really
does. Like,
yeah, yeah. He can turn anything to gold, honestly.
He really just delivers. And so I found him to be a really fun character to watch in season one. And then I didn't even realize, I mean, I realized he was missing, but I also didn't realize he was missing until we got him back. And I was like, oh, this is what we've been missing here is like the level of absurdity that, you know, like that Gideon as a character is and that Giancarlo Esposito brings to him. There's a particular energy about it that's so much fun to watch. And like getting that scene at the beginning, I was like, oh, I needed more of this for sure. Yeah.
And also too, I mean, stuff is happening with Thrawn in the background. We got Captain Peleon, who is Thrawn's right-hand man during Rebels. And so obviously Thrawn is somewhere back in the mix, and hearing Moff Gideon talk about Thrawn was crazy in my mind. Like just hearing like Giancarlo Esposito say the words like Grand Admiral Thrawn was like, whoa, that's kind of cool. Right. That's wild. But yeah, if those, there was many gasps in the room when that happened at Celebration. People were losing their minds, but seeing sort of how Gideon plays into the formation of the First Order, and it kind of all clicks together of like why he wanted to stop Pershing, right? He wanted to make it look like the cloning efforts were over, but really like it's kind of a red herring, and he's doing it on his own, and he has been doing it since season one. That's why he needed Grogu's DNA.
Right.
In season one, and you know what was going on Navarro with that facility that was there. So he's been moving pieces in the background, but seeing Brundle Hux, played by Brian Gleeson, who is Domhnall Gleeson's brother, who plays Armitage
Hux. Whose
name
is Brian?
Yeah, Brian Gleeson. Yes.
I love how, you know, Brian and Domhnall's parents were like, I'm gonna name you Domhnall, and I'm gonna name you Brian.
Oh my gosh. You know, I was always hoping that Brendan Gleeson would play Brundle Hux, because I just really want Brendan Gleeson in a Star Wars, especially after Banshees. You're just like, oh, this guy's got to be in Star Wars at some point. But I'll take Brian Gleeson. Like, I think he sounds just like Armitage, and you can just feel like, I was like, you're like, yeah, that's his dad. That's Hux's dad. 100%. Like all the mannerisms, the voice, like it's just so perfect. And it was like a really bad day for people who think like The Mandalorian is going to retcon the sequel trilogy. And like, you know, John Favreau is like secretly like trying to like erase that. And it's like, LOL, actually, here is a Hux. Also, here are Praetorian guards from The Last Jedi that you hate. LOL. Like, it's such a great day. It was a great day to be a sequel trilogy fan and feel very vindicated in everything that was happening. So
I love my crumbs.
I know. I was like talking to some people. They were just so excited. They're like, yeah, like right. The Rian Johnson energy at the end there was just so great. Like seeing the Praetorian guards like just come in and take out Paz Vizsla in like three shots and just leave, you know, like how petty. How petty of a Praetorian guard just to walk in there, kill someone and leave. Like no words spoken. They're just like, yeah, another. Another day on the job of being a Praetorian guard.
Right.
Just emerge from the shadows, murder, and leave.
I thought it was a really silly thing to bring back for this. I don't understand why they're there. We don't know anything about them, but I was like, all right. And then I watched, you were like, Sarah, can we watch the cold open together? And I was like, yeah, I got you. So we sat there and we watched it. And then I like didn't get back to watching the rest of the episode for like a week. And I was like, Brad, you just got to tell me. Brad, you literally just have to tell me. Do the Praetorian guards like actually show up? And you're like, well, I'm not going to say anything. I was like, no. Like, you literally just need to tell me. Just like, it's not that serious one way or the other, but I just like need to know. And you're like, yes. And I was like, oh, good. I was like, I just needed to know.
Yeah.
So.
Set the expectations very clearly.
Right.
But yeah, you know, I just speaking of the Shadow Council and last thought here is I do wonder how much of this will get continued through the various Mandoverse projects, because we know that like Filoni's movie is supposed to culminate this budding war between New Republic and Empire. And so I do get the feeling that with Moff Gideon off the table, who's somebody that like suggested new leadership and was kind of being sassy towards Thrawn. I think Thrawn will fill that power vacuum, you know, power fills a vacuum. And I think he'll kind of slide right in there and be this new imposing threat. And I think he's going to lead a full fledged effort against the Republic. Cause you know, all these people who are on the council are talking about the rules and the regulations of the new Republic. And there are people who are sympathetic to their cause and that hate this new Republic and yada, 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 which I find interesting, right? Like we don't often talk about like how many people are there within the Republic who are sympathetic and just don't say it, you know, sympathetic to the Empire, right. Ordinary citizens, people working in government. I think some of that is in Bloodline as well, right? Yes. People who are working for the First Order in secrecy, and you know, Leia is having to deal with that and navigate that political battlefield. So there's so much richness in this time period. Like, does the idea of that kind of like escalating war excite you? You know, maybe even with Mon Mothma in the mix, who we saw in the Ahsoka trailer, like Zyoda. Like, there's so many different. There's so many different players happening here. Like,
right.
It's pretty exciting. It's kind of some interesting stuff.
I'll be curious to see where it goes, because I think like the political nature of this was ultimately underdeveloped, or not as richly developed as I would hope so.
I agree.
And if that's what we're moving towards, I really hope they take the time to do that. I mean, it doesn't need to be like Andor, but like, I do hope for a clearly built and clearly positioned politic and understanding of the world. Because I think what I was just missing in here was like an understanding of like, we kind of got the New Republic side of it. We definitely didn't get the Empire side of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Anyway, I do think it's interesting though. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see the ways in which Thrawn's appearance throughout like the Ahsoka show plays into that. Because we obviously know that Thrawn is a major player in the galaxy. And he's got to return. You know, like, we're searching for Ezra. We're going to find Ezra. As like just a continuation of the story. So,
man, I was hoping Thrawn and Ezra had become buddies and were roasted marshmallows. Like, maybe that's the optimist in me.
Maybe
but
they have.
It does not appear to be the case.
You know, like, maybe
whatsoever.
They have. And maybe, like, Thrawn, maybe, like, Ezra is like an Eli Vanto type.
Maybe Ezra is Snoke.
You know what? You're so right to say that.
Yeah.
You're so on the nose.
Anyways, I agree with you though. I think the whole Empire and New Republic escalation is again like fitting into one of my issues with the season is like the underdevelopment of things and you know, spending so much time maybe in the wrong places or on the wrong things. And I think that boils down to the writing. And I really, really, really hope that Favreau takes a backseat with the writing for season four and maybe gives it to some new talent, some new creatives, because like, honestly, a lot of times in the show, like it just doesn't feel like it's humans talking to each other. It feels like a chat, like GPT, like wrote, like an AI wrote the scripts for these episodes, because it's kind of like, you know, explain X, talk about going to Y, and then explain plan Z once we get to place Y, and then talk about X again, you know? And it's just not like a natural order of things. And so I think oftentimes when there's like these really interesting ideas being explored, it's like the depth isn't there, you know? It's like, it's like, oh yeah, like that, like the Shadow Council, that seems really cool. Like, why is there a Shadow Council? Like, why does it exist? Like, what brought these people together? Like, what are their ideologies? And it's kind of just like New Republic bad. I don't like them because they're rules, you know? And it's like, okay, well, like what is there more than that, you know? And that's also why I was kind of left also not connecting with the characters as closely as I wanted to, like characters like Koska or characters like the Armorer or Axe Wolves, who I always thought was Axe Wolves. I thought that was his name, and it's actually Axe Wolves.
It can be Axe Wolves in your brain.
But maybe I'm going to keep calling him Axe Wolves because it sounds cooler. I feel like they forgot an L in there, like in a script or something, or in the credits. And there's like, we got to call him Axe Wolves now. Because it feels like it should be Axe Wolves. Yeah. All I'm saying. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. Hashtag make him Axe Wolves. Not my Axe Wolves.
I think it would have been more like, maybe that's be part of the reason, because I haven't watched season two, so I don't fully understand the Casca Reeves X Wolves faction of things. But like, one thing that I did like about this season was like seeing the different factions come together, because you can tell how radically different they are from one another. And like, I do think that's really valuable. I just wish I liked the one that we were following the most more.
Right.
I felt like we watched that one episode of Mando season 3.5 in Book of Boba Fett. That one episode that I really actually like, I think is really good, where Armorer's like, "You're an apostate, Din Djarin." And then I was like, okay, Armorer, if you fell off this platform right now, I would wave goodbye, you know, toodaloo. And then like Din goes back to them. He feels a certain sense of community with them and a certain sense of desire to want to be a part of that community. And that's why he goes with, you know, he goes to the Living Waters, yada, yada, yada. And for me, like, I don't fully get it. I don't fully get why he decides to go back to them, because I don't have the most positive opinions of the Armorer and her point of view. Mm-hmm. And like, yes, part of it may be the fact that I connect a lot easier with unmasked characters when we're able to act, you know, and emote with the face and all that, etc. But like, also, I feel like after that episode in the Book of Boba Fett, you're not supposed to really like her. She comes down on Din really hard, and I think like really cruelly. Like, the only reason why he removed his helmet in the first place was it was the only option for self-preservation in that moment. So I found that to be a confusing element of this season, because I have a lot of close friends who are Armorer fans and are really positive on this season. And I'm just not quite seeing what they're seeing when it comes to her. And is the faction Death Watch, even though they said Death Watch is no more? Like,
yeah, they're the Children of the Watch. And then Death Watch was another faction that split off. That was Bo-Katan's faction.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. She eventually left them.
Yeah, so like, for me, the Children of the Watch, I don't feel positively invested in them, which made me like the coming together of the factions to see how different they were really interesting, but also frustrated me throughout the season, because I was like, why are we coming back here? She treated you really cruelly, in my opinion. Anyway.
Yeah, the whole idea that I think we come to this season is Mandalorians are stronger together. And I'm actually a fan of the Darksaber being destroyed, because, and we talked about this on our Battle Scars episode, and the idea of like Seer, who is trying to rebuild the legacy of the Jedi, and she wants something that people can look to, like physical objects that people can look to and remember that legacy through. Mm-hmm. And I think the Darksaber is a great example of, like, yes, objects are important, but like, what is more important? And to like Din Djarin, when he talks to Bo-Katan, is like, you know, loyalty, character, like things that you exhibit, Bo-Katan, like your song is not yet written. Like, that's a great scene. I love right. that. I love that kind of stuff. And Din, who is somebody who was not born Mandalorian, but was taken in by Mandalorians and took the creed, for him to recognize like how minuscule that object actually is, and for it to now be destroyed, and for the Mandalorians to move forward and to find leadership and people who actually exhibit leadership qualities, rather than like who holds the Darksaber, like who's the most important, like who's the kid at recess with the Darksaber that I'm going to follow, like, cause they're cool, you know, like,
right.
It's more about that. Now it's about Mandalorians are stronger together. And these two factions who once would have probably warred with each other can coexist. And they can like put aside their differences and recognize that like we have common goals and we have common enemies. So like, why would we continue infighting? You know, the things that have been driving Mandalorians apart for decades. Like, we need to come together and sort out those differences and coexist. Like, yes, you guys can keep your helmets on. We can keep our helmets off. That's fine. We have the same end goal here, right? Take back Mandalore, reignite that forge, and live, you know, it's like Planet Earth. Planet Earth has so many cultures across planet Earth, right? Like, Mandalore can be a planet that there are so many different cultures of Mandalorians around that planet, and they can try to coexist as best they can, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's an aspirational goal. But on the flip side, I do wish there were like a deeper examination of the Children of the Watch and, you know, the recognition that maybe their ways were a bit flawed and like maybe Din Djarin wasn't wrong to remove his helmet, right? Because I think the way the mm-hmm. show presents this whole thing with Din was like, yes, Din was wrong. Like he was not noble in taking his helmet off. And like Din doesn't have any sort of self-reexamination of that. He's just like, I need to be redeemed. And then he gets redeemed. And then he never thinks about the helmet getting removed ever again. It's never a subject to be brought up, you know, besides like, hey, we remove them at dinner and we go like into like our hidey holes to eat our soup.
Right.
I just wish there were more introspection with this faction, mm-hmm, with mm-hmm. Din, because it felt like we were getting to a place where Din was maybe going to question the way, or maybe there would be a new way for the Children of the Watch, or like maybe they would have some sort of transformation. And I think the only transformation that they had was just tolerating other groups that weren't theirs, which is positive. That's positive growth.
Yeah.
But they don't really examine the consequences of the things that they've been doing. And like, how, you know, I kind of wish the armorer maybe had a moment that was like, Din, you want to remove your helmet? You can walk both worlds just like Bo-Katan. You've earned it. All you've done for the Creed, you know, like give Din Djarin that freedom, that permission. Cause Din is somebody who is honorable and loyal. And he needs things spelled out. He is not going to remove his helmet unless he's told he can. Right. And so I think he was deserving of maybe that sort of freedom. And for the armor, maybe to have a moment of like, I was wrong, you know, like growth, positive growth. I don't know.
Yeah. It didn't feel like there was a lot of tension between the armor and Din, because Din was immediately like, okay, I have to get redeemed. I just want your love again, armor, please. And I wish there was more pushback to that idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then the armorer seems pretty accept. She's the one that invites Bo-Katan to take her helmet off. It's interesting. I don't know.
Right. And I think like the Children of the Watch, as we've talked about, they have redeeming qualities. It's just like, I wish there was more of an examination of that and like their way and like that it maybe isn't the best way. And for me, it feels like a lot of Din Djarin has walked backwards this season in some ways, right? It felt like season one was like, okay, here's this hardened warrior who meets this baby and, you know, he's embracing his inner child again, right? Like mm-hmm. the armor is sort of like this facade that he puts on to protect himself, the walls that he's built up ever since he lost his parents. And
right,
so
right,
that,
right.
That's what being a bounty hunter is for him, right? Season one is like, you know, knocking, chiseling away the armor, you know, to get that yes. soft egg underneath, right? He takes the helmet off literally and gets healed by a droid. You know, there's part of it. And then season two is like, hey, there's other factions of Mandalorians. There's Boba Fett. There's Bo-Katan. Like, wow, like such different Mandalorians who are all taking their helmets off, right? And then the end of the season two, he takes his helmet off, you know, and that right. for me was a huge choice of like, I am not going to just live my life by these rigid constructs. Like I'm going to show my face to my son and finally like shed the armor and like break down those walls that I've had up for so long that started getting broken down in season one. And then for him to just sort of go back and say, no, actually, you know what? All that growth, that was a mistake. I need to redeem myself. It just felt so, I think that for me, like that's what really took me out of the season. Cause I was so invested in Din Djarin's journey and like that journey of like, not hiding in the shadows, not hiding behind the mask anymore, like really being who he is and embracing that. And, you know, I was just a little bummed that he kind of reverted back to his former programming in a way of like, I am a Mandalorian and I don't remove my helmet. And,
right.
I just thought we had kind of moved beyond that. And I know people are saying like, well, Pedro's busy and he's busy doing things. So like, obviously they had to do that because he's filming stuff and like a couple things. Like I don't think that's a fair excuse to build, like to not only like build story choices, but walk back on story choices just because of production and scheduling. And also the second thing is just Pedro can do whatever he wants. He is the biggest star in Hollywood right now. Like if Lucasfilm asks him to come back for 1 to 2 days of reshoots and just shoot with the helmet off for those 2 days inside the volume, which again is supposed to be this technology that you can recreate any scene at any exact moment. Like that should be an easy thing to do. Like, that's just how production works. They can do that. That's what reshoots are for, you know? Yeah. And I think they could have done that at least. And it's the first season that we haven't seen him without his helmet on. And I was a little sad. I just like Pedro Pascal's face. Okay, don't yell at me, people.
I think some people would say like, oh, well, him choosing to go back and, you know, quote unquote, redeem himself and join the Children of the Watch again is him, you know, shedding that programming, that upbringing, and him like choosing that path for himself, even if it's the same path for before. And like, I see that, but I just don't know if I agree with it.
Yeah, totally.
You know, but it is interesting. And I do, you know, think that Pedro is a really good actor, and I don't feel like he's given enough under the mask. And maybe the way that he's also chosen to perform Din like doesn't help, because Din is quite monotonous in his delivery. It feels like his muscles are tense whenever he's delivering. And I know that that's intentional. Like, you know, Pedro's not an unintentional actor. He thinks about what he's doing. But I do think it makes that character feel somewhat stilted already. And so when he does stay in the mask for the whole season and doesn't show his face, and we're only getting that stilted delivery without any sort of push and pull on who he is as a person, which I don't really feel like we get much in this season. The factors that, I think maybe this is what you were hitting on, like the factors that got drive the season are much more external than like himself and his relationship with Grogu. Make it so there's nowhere to go with him to feel like we're invested in what he's going to do next.
And like, nobody truly challenges Din to say like, why do you think you have to be redeemed, bud? Like, why do you actually think that, you know? And I thought Bo-Katan was maybe going to be that person that was like, do you really want to do this? Is this really what you want? You know,
she kind of was like, you know, you don't have to, but then she's like, okay, I'll go with you anyway.
And I think if anything, this season definitely made me realize how much I struggle to connect with helmeted characters, which was something that like you had talked about a lot with me before, just like in prior seasons, was like, you know, it was hard for you to connect with Din because of the helmet, because you need to see eyebrows and you got to see that stuff. And now I get it now. And I think I got it even more like seeing Katie take off the helmet and put it back on so frequently. It was like every time that helmet went on Bo-Katan, I was like zoned out, you know? Like, I was like, as cool as she looks in the helmet, I was also like, I want to see Katie Sackhoff. Like, I want to see her face. Like, I want to see the hair, like the new glow up that she got. Right. And like the scars and like the scowl that she has when she talks and when she gets angry. Imagine the scene in chapter 24 where Pedro's going through that hallway unhelmeted, like fighting all of those dudes. Like, how much more that would have connected, at least with me. To see that struggle on his face makes a whole lot of a difference. So that's just aside for myself.
I think it makes a difference, but like, I don't think it's like an end all be all. Like, I do think that the way that the delivery from the armorer and from Din, which is very stiff in a character sense and not like in a actor sense, because again, I know that they're thinking about this, but like stiff in a character sense. And it's like there's the physical armor, but there's also an emotional armor that they all have built. And so it for me, it's difficult to connect because we're not even getting that emotional vulnerability in a sense. Mm-hmm. From them, even when they are masked. So like, it's, I don't know, it's just complicated. And I'm not here to like condemn masks as a whole, but like for me, I think it's a lot easier for me to connect. I'm a big fan of the gaze. I love it. Well, take that in both terms. Take that as you will. but like mutual pining, gazing, the way that people look at one another can tell you a lot about the relationship that they have with one another, right? Like, doesn't matter where you're watching, you know, you're hanging out with your friends and you just like see your friend like fondly looking at you because you're having a fun time together, or like, oh, there's a mutual crush and, you know, somebody's not looking, but the other person is just like big eyes, like, I am in love with you, exclamation point. You know, like those kinds of things.
Rey and Kylo in the elevator and TLJ.
Oh my God. Okay. But like those kinds of moments where you're just understanding a little bit better about the ways in which people are looking at one another, I think it's really helpful for character development, especially when the tone and the affect of the voice is less colorful. And we're both not getting the colorful kind of delivery of lines. It's alongside, you know, not being able to understand the ways in which the characters are looking at each other positively or negatively. And that's why a character like Gideon, when Giancarlo walks in and he's putting so much color in his lines, when you just have no choice but to have so much fun eating them up, because
Bo-Katan, we have to stop meeting like this.
He brings such energy. And I don't know.
I love Giancarlo, by the way. I love as soon as he was back on screen, I was like, yes, this is so good food. Yes. Ugh.
Can we talk about some other, kind of moving into chapter 22, can we talk about some other appearances that we just ate up?
Yeah, let's talk about it. Because we did like chapter 22 quite a bit. Like we enjoyed it. Yeah.
Chapter 22 was like Star Wars, but make it Trek, like classic Trek. And I really enjoyed that. And I think it was Katrina Dennis who tweeted something like, I would love to see Lizzo in Star Wars, like 3 weeks prior to this episode happening. And then Lizzo retweeted it and was like, well, about that. And then you retweeted that. And I was like, what? And then there was so much Lizzo talk on my timeline. I was like, I mean, I love Lizzo. You're not going to see me complain about Lizzo conversations ever. She's the best. But like, why are we getting so much conversation about her on my timeline right now? And it's because she's in the episode with Jack Black.
Yes. And they're married. They're together. They're in love.
Oh my God.
Duchess and the Bombardier.
What a great, no comment, like no notes, 10 out of 10, absolutely absurd, perfect. You're never going to hear me complaining about that Star Wars moment. Like, I love Lizzo. Jack Black is honestly an icon. He's so cool. And he's so talented. So to see them both kind of playing the comedy and bouncing off each other was so much fun. It was ridiculous. It was ridiculous.
That whole episode was like a fever dream, honestly, because I think sometimes the show tries to take itself so seriously, like too seriously. And this was an episode where I just felt like, yeah, let's just go for it. And by go for it, like, the goofiest, silliest, campiest Star Wars that is Star Wars, like in an episode, right? Like you have like these two like instantly recognizable stars. You have Christopher Lloyd playing like Commander Hellgate, who is like this separatist loyalist who loves Count Dooku, as like a secret admirer of Count Dooku, right? Basically. You have all these droids, like the battle droids are back, the B2s, the B1s, the Matthew Woods voicing them again, like.
Right.
Running around the city, good cop, bad cop, like Bo-Katan trying to be the reasonable one, and Mando's just like, do you want me to rip your thing out of your head? And she's like, can you calm yourself, please? Like, we can do this a different way, you know? And yeah, the droid bar, the resistor, you know, what a great, I want to drink there. I think they need to add another bar, like, across the park from Elga's, but it's called the Resistor and it has all those droids in there. You just go in there and you can take pictures with the droids at the table and they like talk to you and they're voiced by cast members. That'd be cool.
I think we need like a bar like that, but also like, I think we need just like the ever so slightly seedy nightclub in bed too. You know, like the music is loud. The characters are, maybe they're not the best in the galaxy, you know, like
some real questionable folk.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I think that'd be really fun, you know, like making, anyway, the droid bar would be so cool. I also have to mention, as this episode was, we were watching it. I heard a little something. And I was like, did he what? And my fellow musical theater fans, people who love the classics will instantly know, do you love me? And then Lizzo replying like, do I love you? And I was like, shit, that is Fiddler on the Roof.
Wait, they said this to each other as like a line, or
yes, it is right when they're walking in, and I don't think you're watching them when he says it, but you hear it, and he goes, "Do you love me?" And then you hear Lizzo kind of reply back, like in the same kind of note pattern. Oh, so it's in the background, like,
sort of.
Do I love? It's not totally in the background, but they're not like the main focus. You know, they're not like fully in frame on camera in that moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I would know that anywhere. I would know that anywhere. And I was so delighted by this. I was like, Fiddler on the Roof is a canon. And I was like, why are we not talking about this? And then some guy to my tweet today, just like replied back to my tweet today and was like, I just made a TikTok about this. And he was like, Jews are also canon now. And I was like, you know what? You're not wrong. Fiddler on the Roof. So Broadway musicals are canon. Jewish people are canon in Star Wars. So
love it.
I was like, this is so, so great. You're like, again, you're never going to see me complain about Jack Black and Lizzo in the Star Wars. I think we should bring them back. Like, I'm so delighted. You can see I'm talking with a smile on my face. I was truly so delighted on this. Fiddler on the Roof, canon in the Star Wars.
We do love to see it. We do love to see it.
We do love to see it. Let's put more musicals in the Star Wars, please.
I agree. I think we should have a Star Wars musical at some point. Holiday special style. So get Adam Driver singing. Yeah, let's do it. Let's bring back the ghost of Ben Solo singing.
Singing Being Alive from Company again.
Yeah, yeah. I also love the battle at the end of this episode where like Bo-Katan finally get to the part where they're going to face down each other, like axe wolves and Bo-Katan, and they fist fight it out, and a really like well-directed fight sequence, I thought. Bryce Dallas Howard, like once again, not directing a bad episode of Star Wars, in my opinion. She's 3 for 3 now. And I thought that was great. I love the, again, like two unhelmeted characters fighting each other. For sort of the like who's going to be the leader of the group situation, and that fight really worked for me because you could see them, the anger and the resentment that they had towards each other in that moment. Is so juicy and delicious. I love it. And of course Bo-Katan straddling axe wolves and going, "Do you yield?" And I was like wow, I hope this doesn't awaken anything. Up too late. Too late for me.
I have a couple more points that I'd also love to bring up before we go anywhere on this episode.
Please.
The cold open.
Oh my gosh. Yes. A Quarren, Forbidden Quarren, Mon Cala love story.
Yeah.
That is great. That is fantastic.
But yeah. Big fan. Also, I have some questions about why is it the Quarren pilot? Yeah, it's the Quarren pilot. Why she's in like a water tank to begin this episode, because it is canon that like the Mon Calamari, maybe it's only the Mon Calamari and not the Quarren ships, but like the Mon Calamari ships have like a heightened humidity on board in order to help them stay moisturized.
Oh wow, okay.
This is a detail that I read in a visual dictionary or encyclopedia at one point and have held onto very tightly as like, this is something Sarah will remember. So
I do want to mention too, the Mon Calamari nobleman is played by Harry Holland, who is Tom Holland's brother.
Really?
Yes. He's voiced by Tom Holland's brother, Harry. So take that, take that as you will. It's wonderful.
That's so wild. Wild. But I did love to see it. I love to see like the creatured characters and like the makeup's looking really good, and I thought the costume for the Mon Cala Royal was really cool as well. Overall, I just thought that was a fun scene, and again, it felt very Trek.
Yeah, you know, definitely the environment, the ship. Yeah, absolutely, right. Totally.
The other thing I want to bring up, other than just like walking in on that dinner and everybody being so colorful and bright and vibrant, is the game that they're playing.
Oh my gosh.
In the episode, which is kind of like Quidditch croquet. It's like, gosh, we're playing croquet, but if it were Quidditch.
Right.
And that's kind of the vibe I got from it. Also,
do we know what it was called? Do we know what that game was called?
I don't remember if it was, if it was told. Yeah, if it was, I didn't catch it.
Yeah.
But is it not Quidditch Croquet? It is Quidditch Croquet. Okay.
Sure. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah. But also, like, Lizzo and Grogu just being besties. Loved that as well.
Yeah. I love when Grogu, like, flipped in the air into her arms when she was, like, dangling the fish in front of him.
Yeah.
And at first, Din was like, yeah, he doesn't like people usually. And Grogu's like, nope, just kidding. I love Lizzo.
Right.
I'm going to hang out with her all day.
Who among us does not, you know? And if
honestly,
you don't,
like,
this is
good for Grogu.
Really not the place for you.
I loved Lizzo posting all of her behind the scenes photos and videos with, like, Jack Black and the Grogu puppet. Honestly, it, like, added 5 years to my life. It was wonderful. It cleared my skin. And, you know, it was one of those, again, like, it was one of those episodes where I was just like, you know what? I love it. I love Star Wars. I was like, I don't even care what has happened on the season of The Mandalorian. I love this episode. It makes me happy. So
yeah,
that
felt
good.
That way about this too.
Also, it was like, watched it very deliriously at 8 a.m. British time when it dropped, which was nice.
Oh, fun.
After a day of travel and a very long day of travel. So it's great.
Yeah. All right.
Added to the experience.
Added to the experience for real. What was it like to witness it in the morning as opposed to, like,
oh, it was great.
The middle of the night.
It was great. Like 8 a.m. Just woke up, dropped 2 minutes ago. Let's do this. Wonderful. Hot take. They should do all TV on Disney Plus on weeknights at like 8 or 9 p.m.
Yeah. Oh my. Did you
Why
just
are we not doing this?
Cable?
Whoa. It's not like Game of Thrones, Succession, Westworld, every like major HBO show trends every Sunday night from like the hours of 8 to 11 p.m. For no reason. What? Imagine if the Mandalorian
did that. I can't believe
that
you just invented cable.
Wow. Anyways, I think we should do that. It would just help the conversation more, and people could also watch it on time and not get spoiled. Woohoo. Please.
Yeah, it is complicated because throughout the world there are many these things are called time zones. They're really complicated and they break my brain on a regular basis. This is why we have widgets on our phones, folks. Keep your widgets for your time zones that you need to know what's going on in. Okay, with that being said, I think we should kind of move into our finale episodes again. We've talked a bit about the Shadow Council. We've talked a little bit about, you know, the take back of Mandalore. We have not talked about Mecha Pilot Grogu. And I feel like we need to talk a little bit about Mecha Pilot Grogu because you and I have different opinions on this. And when we watch this cold open, we continue to watch through this. And you told me, I'm just going to speak for you, sorry. You told me, like, in the room, everybody was busting a gut. It was so funny. Everybody was responding really loudly to this moment. And for me, in my home, in bed, watching it with you via my computer, I was like, no. No, no, no. We're not doing this. We are doing this. We're not doing it. No, we're not. Well, no. I reject this. I reject this. And then we did it. And I have to admit that the no, no, no was really funny. But like Mecha Pilot Grogu, terrible idea.
Yeah, you can't put that little kid behind the wheel. He'll just do all sorts of crazy stuff, like go to a fruit stand, rob a guy, eat all his fruit, squeeze a mail rune or whatever it's called. One of those like fruit things.
Yes.
Yeah, he was just going. I know there may be some conversation. I know L3 is like rolling in her grave, watching the inanimate body of a droid get used as a gag.
Right.
For a baby to sit in. But I will say I do like that IG-12 ended up, well, IG-11 coming back to be the marshal of Navarro.
Yeah.
You know, right at the end. I was like, ah, that's nice and fitting, you know, like IG-11 has a purpose, right? Like, we didn't just use his corpse as a gag. Like, we recovered the parts and, you know, got the new memory unit from the New Republic base, and here he is, you know, alive and well, which I liked. I gotta admit, like, Grogu noticing the IG head in the bar and like pointing to it, and then Din Djarin just being like, no, that's not him, buddy. It's just like so cute, you know, like
being them being like, but wait.
Could be. Maybe. But just like, you know, just like Grogu, like his little childlike instincts of being like, is that him? You know, like, I just think that's so cute. And then being like, no, it looks like him. No, I get it. You miss your little buddy, don't you? You know, and that inspiring a little bit to like, hey, maybe we can do something with that part, perhaps.
Right.
But I, for one, was laughing my ass off at Mecha Grogu walking through town, slapping the yes button. I was in tears.
Not me.
I was in tears. It was ridiculous. And I think it was one of the funniest gags that Mandalorian has ever done with the timing and with the cutting and the editing. Like, it just worked so well on a comedy level for me. I just wish the show did more of that kind of slapstick humor that works well. And I definitely think Carl Weathers aided that moment. With him being like, look, he's telling you he wants to do it. Yes. You know, like, so perfect. It's so perfect. I love it.
I thought it was truly ridiculous. I mean, like, I'm not going to deny that it was funny, but like, I was like, absolutely no, we are not going out on this route. And we were going down this route. We were. So, oh, well, I've lived through it now.
Speaking of some other great Grogu moments, yes. I guess thinking of like chapter 24, Grogu getting his moment to rescue Din Djarin from the Mando trooper and starting to spray the Bacta on Din, just being like, I guess this is what I do, right? Bacta spray, dad,
yeah.
Dad, here's yep. the Bacta spray, dad. He's like, I'm good.
I thought
I'm
that
good.
Was pretty good, actually.
Yeah. You know, calling back to chapter 8. When IG-11 sprayed the Bacta on a helmetless Din Djarin on Pedro Pascal's beautiful face. That was great. You know, watching Din Djarin take out a whole hallway of troopers one by one as the shields open up, just taking them out. Like, the fight choreography were there was wonderful. Like, the moment when he reaches for the knife, but the knife is in the guy and the guy's falling into, like, the abyss and he just, like, kind of misses it, like, and he's like, ah, you know, like, just such good stuff there. And then Grogu, like, later on having his moment, running after his dad, being like, no, 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 when the Praetorians are there, and draws the Praetorians off, and it's like, hopping around the ceiling, like, laughing, like, literally laughing at these three Praetorian guards. Like, Kylo and Rey are fighting their asses off. Like, they are like, we might die. We might not make it through this. Grogu, when he fights a Praetorian guard, like running around the ceiling, like laughing, jumping, flipping, flippy, flippy Grogu. Like, I love that for him. He had an easier time fighting those than Rey and Kylo. I think that's hilarious. But also, those three are the only Jedi to have fought a Praetorian guard, at least to my knowledge. Pretty cool.
Perhaps. Pretty cool. I also thought that moment was pretty funny, and I thought it was really clever. Like, the humor was well placed in there. I thought it was interesting too, like the Praetorians, how their look and their weapons changed over the years. And it's like they leveled up for Rey and Kylo.
Yeah, definitely. Like their ultimate form.
Right.
And I love too, like Grogu, when Din does come to him and he's using the Force together with Mando and his fist fighting skills. I thought that was a great example of the way that these two can work together, and also how Grogu has sort of taken on this new role within that duo of like, and maybe similar to Omega, right? Like Omega and Grogu in like their first respective seasons was all about protect these two, you know, protect Omega, protect Grogu, and don't let them get in harm's way. And now it's kind of like Grogu and Omega like are fighting the baddies at the same time. Like Grogu is fighting the Praetorians, Omega's fighting the troopers, right? And so they have a little bit more autonomy in these situations. And trust from their fathers, from Hunter, from Din. And I think that's kind of wonderful when you see that growth. And Grogu, like, doing the slide, like, with his dad, who also is doing the slide to, like, force push Moff Gideon. Like, that is such a good moment of, like, him picking up these little subtle things that his dad does, like, while also incorporating the things that he learned from Luke Skywalker, you know, during his training. So it's just, like, just wonderful blend of Grogu like being a Jedi and being a Mandalorian, and I think that's what makes him so special, is he like walks these two worlds, and that's just like beautiful. I love Grogu. Grogu is like my man.
He's
my little
cutie.
Baby, my little green shit. I love him.
There's no denying that he is baby who we love.
Yeah. A little cutie pie.
Indeed. Indeed. Okay. I think we should go like two other parts of this battle really quickly. Because, was Gideon a clone?
Oh,
or no?
Talk of the town right now. Yeah.
And also, have they like, they've successfully retaken Mandalore. What's next for them? I think is my question.
Yeah. Is Gideon a clone? Sarah, what do you think?
Yes, but only because they wasted Giancarlo Esposito in this season otherwise.
Yeah, my answer was going to be no, he's not a clone until they want him to be. until they want Giancarlo back, then he's a clone.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Because the people were talking about like, oh, like the clones and the tanks didn't have mustaches and Moff Gideon had a mustache before and now he doesn't have a mustache.
You specifically told me that. I know. I was like, oh.
I was kind of drinking the Kool-Aid, but like at the same time, man might have just shaved one day and was like, hey, I was getting a little itchy.
Right.
I understand. I grew like a beard like a month ago. I shaved it off and it was like,
get itchy.
I felt like a new person. Yeah, I got way too itchy. So I understand, you know, you got to roll Mandalore and shave your beard, shave your mustache. But yeah, we'll see. If they realize like they want back Moff Gideon, they'll just be like, yeah, that was a clone. Ooh. What did you think of Moff Gideon's plan to combine all three things, you know, Empire, Mando, Jedi, Super Soldier? Ah,
silly I'm nonsense. A villain. Silly nonsense.
He's going to give himself the one thing he's never had.
The Force.
We had some thoughts there. Some not safe for work thoughts.
We can't. Okay. We can't be the only ones that had this thought. We cannot be the only ones. If you know this thought, please tell us that you also had this thought. We can't be the only ones. Okay.
That's all we will say on the matter. All.
We just
That's
can't.
It.
There's
it's
no
where we draw
way.
The line. It's where we draw
I refuse,
the line.
I refuse to believe I'm the only one who had this thought.
Because my brother also said the same thing. My brother was like, yeah, I also said the same thing. And I thought the same thing that he was going to
so
say.
So there
it
are
like
at
a
least
joke.
Three of
There's
us.
There's three of us. Yeah. So anyways.
But it can't be just us. Anyway.
Is Dr. Pershing okay, by the way?
Definitely not.
That bums me out. I feel bad for our friend Arzu, who is a huge Dr. Pershing fan. And is he alive is the question. You know, who knows if he survived the therapy, quote unquote therapy that Aliyah Kane provided to him in the form of like zapping his mind.
Honestly, he's probably okay. And like, you know, we'll probably see him again. I hope he's a really interesting character, but like, he's definitely not okay. He's not okay.
Yeah.
He's not okay.
Not okay. No. He's gone through some stuff. To answer your other question though, like what is next for the Mandalorians? That is the big question. I mean, now they, you know, they have a new home. They can induct people into the creed, such as Ragnar, who apparently didn't finish, who never finished his giving those final words, like back in chapter one or chapter the first episode of the season. Which is interesting. He lost his dad. Not
yeah,
again,
like
no acknowledgement of that.
Today.
Just like he's just like this emotionless child who's like, I lost my dad, but the creed is all I need. I live for the creed. Here are the words spoken. It's like, are you okay? You doing good, bud? Hope Ragnar's okay.
Ragnar's, you know, just like Pershing, he's definitely not like okay, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Ragnar, Pershing, handshake emoji, not okay.
Not okay. Alive, but
not doing well, yeah.
Yeah.
So Sarah, or should I call you Haas Sarah? What do you think what are you thinking of Grogu's new name? Huh? What are your
you
thoughts?
Know, there are many naming conventions throughout the world. You know, here in the US, we usually do like a first name, middle name, last name. In Thailand, they have like a first name, last name, but then they go by their like chosen nickname a lot of the time. In Korea, it's like three syllables, typically two or three syllables, and it's last name, first name, first name, no middle name, or last name, first name, first syllable, second. Got what I'm saying there? Okay, last name, first name. So maybe he's just like adapting the, you know, like Korean style. And John Favreau was like, that, you know, they've got a great naming convention over there in Korea, and we're just going to do it. So like one syllable last name, two syllables first name, Din Djarin. I don't know what was going through his head, but it was a bit of a, like a record scratch, look straight into camera. Wait, is his first name Djarin? Or does Grogu, is he just adopting his, you know, his dad's first name? Maybe he's like,
until he can speak and take the creed, and then he loses that surname potentially.
But that's, I don't know that I don't, where is that rooted in, out of pure curiosity?
Well, that's,
is
again,
that like
that's
fan theory, or is that like something that's rooted in
somebody had said that like maybe this is just something, and you know, he's adopting him, and because Grogu can't speak for himself, his name is going to be Din Grogu first, because Din is the one who speaks for him, kind of thing. That's the theory, but again, it's like these things that were never problems or issues or things that were like culturally established with the Mandalorians, like all of a sudden being culturally established at the last second and being like, what, wait, what? You know,
it's so kind of like, interesting.
Yeah. And I think maybe, again, like that is maybe a good moment in the moment explaining like why he will be named Din Grogu. Like Din, you'll be Din Grogu because your father is your, you know, your guardian or something from here on out, you know, to kind of like give it some more meaning other than to just be like head scratch. What, you know, and then to cause like chaos amongst the fans, like. Now not knowing anything about Mandalorian naming conventions. So
I feel like if we had learned more about that, I would have been like, oh, they're just explaining things now.
me. They explain too much. Also me, explain more, please. Explain everything. But that's the thing. It's like for a show that explains a lot of things, the one thing you want them to explain, they don't. It's like, come on. Come on, John. Give us the Mandalorian naming goods. Please. Anyways. But hey, we got a happy ending in the Star Wars. Can you believe it? We got a happy ending. We got a little Looney Tunes, like, iris in shot of Grogu.
That's true.
Playing with the little froggies and Mando, like, sitting on his chair at the house. That's wonderful. You know, for all like things aside, all criticisms, all whatever aside, I do love a good happy ending in Star Wars. I'm glad they didn't just kill off Din for like dramatic effect or anything of that nature, you know, and that he just gets to like truly live a little bit of a life with his son, Grogu. And, you know, that's something that he has always wanted ever since Chapter 4 Sanctuary, when like Omera's like, hey, like, you and your son could have a good life. Like, wouldn't that be nice? And Din says, yeah, it would be. And here he is now actually getting to live that life that Omera thought might be good for him. It makes me really happy. I don't know, like, what were your closing thoughts on that final shot and just kind of the soft music playing and, you know, getting a happy ending?
I thought it was nice. I wish Omera were a part of it.
her or Cobb Vanth better walk out of that house very soon and sit next to Din.
As an Omera stan, I like would have loved to see it, but I think it was nice that they, like, you know, he's like, and here's your key to the city and to your little cottage that I got for you, and I thought it was really lovely to see them have a peaceful moment, and also to see Din kind of thinking about the future with Grogu in mind and how they can, you know, work for both of them and also maintain some sense of normalcy in a way.
I'm just happy Grogu got a little frog pond, you know?
Little frog pond. I do like his little frog pond.
Calling back to when he trained with Luke and he's like levitating all the frogs around him, you know? And like Luke's like, hey, hey, you know?
Hey.
And now Grogu can just levitate as many frogs as he wants to and no Jedi Master to tell him no. It's wonderful. Wonderful. I do wonder what's in store for these characters next, because like we know there is going to be like an impending writer's strike, and you know, I think in some ways maybe they kind of hedged their bets here and wrote this to sort of be a series finale if it needed to, you know, and like maybe with the possibility of Din and Grogu like appearing in other places if they need to be, but only time will tell. So like whether or not we do get a season 4, unknown at this point. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
I don't really know, because it feels like there's a resolution here, and it feels like there's, you know, a renewed interest in other Filoni Favreauverse projects, including the now film and other series like Ahsoka and Skeleton Crew. So I just don't know when they're going to return to these characters or how they'll be incorporated.
Yeah. I mean, I have to bring them back at some point in some form or fashion, because they are a moneymaker. You know,
oh, like totally.
Grogu puts people in seats probably at the movies. So I'd imagine Mando and Grogu will show up at least in the film. To be like, hey, Mandalorian's back on the big screen. Haha.
It'll be curious to see how the writer strike, assuming that it does happen, which it looks like it will affect Star Wars projects specifically. To what extent?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's just me pondering out loud.
But yeah, I mean, I will admit I will miss Din and Grogu, because again, they are two characters that I do love and I do cherish. And I do hold that final image very near and dear to my heart, because I was distraught after the two were separated at the end of season two, and it is nice to now see them reunited and living their life. And, you know, if that's all we get for a while, that's a pretty good final image to hold on to at the very least. So, but I think that about wraps it up for our discussion here on kind of the last three episodes and a bit of the season overall. You know, I had fun. It was entertaining watching it, despite it being a bit uneven for me personally and in my tastes. But I'm glad to have gone on the journey, and I look forward to future shows in the upcoming year and a half, including Skeleton Crew, which is really the next big show for me, at least, that I have an interest in. And, you know, I can't wait to see more of the Mandoverse, you know, from other creatives like Christopher Ford and John Watts, and to see like what those two guys can actually offer these stories and kind of inject into this time period that that will be exciting. And I really enjoy the trailer at Celebration, so I look forward to it. But any final thoughts from you before we wrap up here?
I feel like I've pretty much said everything I have intended to say. There's always fun moments in the show. And I hope that those people who, you know, really enjoyed it continue to really enjoy it. And I'll be curious to see in the ways in which they continue this storyline and see kind of how it pans out for our various factions and their characters, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I'm on the journey. I'm on the boat. The boat's moving.
The boat's moving. It is a boat, too.
It's like the Jungle Cruise.
Boat features, so.
Yeah, you know, it's like the Jungle Cruise. And
yeah.
Like sometimes you see something really pretty on the Jungle Cruise, and sometimes you see the snakes, you know?
Yeah. You just never know what's going to be on the Jungle Cruise.
Some people really like the snakes.
A little scary. A little scary. Yeah. Some people though, not so much. Definitely not. Definitely not me. I don't like snakes. So no more snakes, please. On Jungle Cruise. Get rid of snakes. Speaking of snakes, why don't you slither on over to our socials, Twitter.
Woo!
Instagram, YouTube, you name it. Follow us there. See what we're talking about relating to Star Wars, unrelated to Star Wars, you name it. But we have a lot of fun stuff planned in the coming weeks and over the summer. So make sure you're following us and leave a rating if you could on the episode, even though it was like a bit more on the critical side. You know, we try to have a pretty fair and balanced discussion, and let us know if you thought that was the case as well, and helps other folks find the show and join the Star Wars discussion. And again, you don't want to miss what we got coming up, because it's going to be fun. It's going to be pretty fun this summer.
It is going to be fun. It's going to be fun.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun.
We also have a Patreon. Our tier started $1. We're very grateful to our patrons who help us keep the lights on this here podcast. So thank you to Ben, Brian, Cheryl, Clay, Deborah, Dylan, D-Sizzle, Emma Huang, Jennifer, Katie, Knights of Ren, Leanne, Levi, Lucy, Lindsay, Matthew, Rob, Saber Bouquet, Santa, Sky Talker, Stephen, Tom, and Travis. We're very grateful for you. And for everyone who took the last hour and a half out of your time to listen to us chat about Mando, for better or for worse, thank you. Hope that you have a lovely day and are hydrated. Stay hydrated, friends. It's getting warmer out there, at least where we are, except not today, because it was like 40 today and it was like 80 the other day. Chicagoland is an evil place sometimes.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. Hydrate, as Sarah said. Thank you all once again for listening. And until next time, may the force be with you always.